Hello, everybody. This is Alan Fine, and I'm here with Elizabeth Rossi, who's the president of Rosenland Travel Service, Inc. in Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. And the reason we're going to talk to her is that she recently won an ASTA award for protecting her clients and for keeping a legacy business going through a crisis. A crisis? A legacy business has been around a long time, a lot of crisis. We're going to talk about all that and more on Insider Travel Report. Beth, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
And so it's very interesting to read about your agency. It started in what year? And who started it?
1912.
And who started it?
My grandfather started the agency in 1912. He was a law school graduate. He was a banker. And he was really the godfather to the Swedish American community. He was an immigrant from Sweden, but he spoke and wrote impeccable English so that he became really the go-to person for the Scandinavian population in Greater Worcester. We were having a huge burgeoning of steelworking businesses that came to Worcester that really built the central Massachusetts area. And they were drawing the skilled labor in the steel business from Sweden in particular and Scandinavia in general. And so my grandfather, being a banker, was appointed to pretty much handle the migration of these people from Sweden to Worcester County. And he, being a law school graduate, was able to handle all of the legal workings. Being a bank executive, he was able to handle the banking things. And then he ended up having to figure out how to get these people here. So that he established ties with all the major steamship companies of the time, Swedish America Line, Holland America Line, Cunard, it went on in a Hanseatic Line, it went on and on. And he established ties with them. And they suggested that he open a little office next to the bank and do steamship tickets. So that's how our agency got started. And he started by doing all these steamship tickets for the people who were coming here to serve the steel industry in central Massachusetts. And it went on from there.
Well, so now that I understand it, he had business even though 6 years later, he had a pandemic to deal with.
Yes. He was busy doing many things, not just writing steamship tickets, so that he had insulation from the devastation of the pandemic.
For people who don't know, Spanish flu of 1918.
I'm not sure of the extent to which the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918 really impacted their lives from a business perspective. But I can say that personally, there was a huge impact. And my grandfather spoke very little about anything that was not positive. But my grandmother used to take me to the cemetery when I was very young, and she'd point out the graves of family members who had recently come to the United States and who had died from the Spanish flu. And it's ironic, with the pandemic we're experiencing now with COVID-19, the mortality is highest among elderly people. In the Spanish flu, she would take me to many children's graves of potential relatives, children who had died. And so I remember it vividly, and I was a little bit confused, but it was very important to her to remember the family members who had perished, would come here, you know, trusting the United States, and had perished in the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918.
That's heartbreaking. But now, so his business was able to survive that because of the other jobs, the other hats he was wearing, just like all travel advisors wear many hats. He
yes.
wore many as well.
Yes.
And then so he passed the agency down to his children.
Actually, it didn't happen that way. My mother did secretarial work and errands for him from the time she was quite young. And then by the time she was in high school, she had learned how to type and do stenography and so forth. And so she was doing most of his clerical work. And then as time went on, she became more interested in train travel and in, for example, talk tours. She was one of the early ones to book talk tours. And Mr. Arthur Tauk Sr. was a contemporary and friend of my grandfather as the industry evolved. And so then we got into more just touring in the United States by bus and by car and by train. And that's how my mother became involved with the agency. And then I think the business for us became a real family effort. And my mother was able to raise a family and still work. And we grew up in the office and doing things that related to travel from as early a time as I can possibly remember. And my dad was a career military officer, and when he, career naval officer, he'd want me to specify that, and that when he retired, he joined the business. And he brought to it an interest in air travel. And as he was coming into the business, air travel was becoming very popular. It was a whole new area. It required a great deal of specific expertise in calculating fear.
What year would that be? When your dad?
That was in, I would say that was in the late 1940s and the early 1950s. And that required a great deal of specificity in calculating airfares and writing air tickets, and something that
was all done by hand.
All done by hand. And that was something that they just hadn't done. And, you know, he just took over that function. So that's what brought him into the business. And then actually, he and my mother ran the business for a number of years, very successfully. And then he was tragically killed in a car accident in his early 50s when we were still young. And as a matter of human interest, to let you know how important the travel industry was, two other travel agencies lent an employee a half day every day to my mother until she could get the agency stabilized, because she had been left with two young children and having to run the agency by herself, which she wasn't prepared to do. And so from
the industry has always taken care of its own.
Honestly, I can't think of a better example of the industry taking care of its own. These were competitors. They were in the same city, and yet they each got together and lent us a very highly skilled employee half a day each. And it went on for about a year and a half until my mother could really get everything all stabilized and figured out in terms of writing airline tickets and reporting to the ARC, all of which my dad had done. So that's really kind of a human interest story about how the agency community was really a community in those times.
Now, were you also a young kid running around the office and then slowly getting involved?
I was. From the time I was 12 years old, I worked there. I went over to Union Station and picked up the railroad tickets. And I filed ABC filing and things like that from the time I was about 12. As a matter of fact, I had to get a worker's permit in order to work at age 12, and from the government, which I still have. And as time went on, I was in and out, involved and not involved. And I went to college, went to graduate school myself, taught school for several years. But then when automation came on strongly in the late 60s, early 70s, they needed younger people to help out. So my sister and I were drafted, and we did a lot of beta testing for Apollo at that time, United Airlines Apollo, and for the accounting systems when they were coming on. We had this little 28, well, it first started out with a 28RO teletype machine, and TWA had adapted that machine so that it could print out airline tickets. Uh-huh. And you have no idea what a boon that was, because we had gone from having a red bump on our hands all the time from squeezing the pen and writing the airline tickets for hours, and all of a sudden
noisy,
they just
though,
came.
Right?
What's that?
It was a noisy machine, I bet.
Oh, it was really noisy, but we didn't care because it just batted out those airline tickets. And that was kind of the beginning of going from handwritten tickets to automated tickets. And then from there, United Airlines came in with the big blue boxes, the CRTs, and everything developed from there. And there was a lot of support. There was a lot of training support, and we were always a beta test site for all the equipment that came out. So it really gave us an advantage in the business in those days.
So you're saying that the suppliers knew that they could rely on you for the testing?
Well, I don't know. I'm not quite sure how we got to be a beta test site, except that they must have known. They figured it out because we were young and we were college educated.
You were adaptable and you were willing and you were energetic.
And it was fascinating. I mean, it was the soul of a new machine. It was a whole, you have to realize, there were no computers. You know, my husband is an engineer and he went to college using a slide rule. And then all of a sudden, all of these things exploded. Technology exploded. It was a whole new world.
But it gave Rosenland a competitive advantage, too.
It did. It did. By that time, we were entirely female-owned. And
what year is that?
That was 1969.
A female-owned. And
we were entirely female-owned. And we were young. We were my old mother and young women who were of childbearing age. And we literally worked night and day and raised our children at the office. So that was an opportunity for us to be career women and have children.
Were you able to travel much? Because the travel advisor of today can work from anywhere. You could not.
Oh, no, we could not. And we'd take turns, but we were traveling all the time. There are a lot of fam trips, a lot of invitations. And then we traveled to Chicago and Denver and places like that for automation classes and briefings. And so we were traveling all the time. And we weren't traveling. My sister and I were in the agency. My mother was in the agency. And we wouldn't travel together. We would each travel, and then the people left behind would take care of the office and the family.
So let's talk about this legacy now being honored by ASTA. Tell us about the award and what it felt like.
It was kind of a surprise. I had no idea that they even knew we existed. And then when they called and said that we'd been one of the oldest members of ASTA, I said, well, I think my grandfather was actually a founding member of ASTA. And so we looked back and we found records that went back to the beginning of ASTA. And I did remember him talking about ASTA, and I remembered my mother talking about ASTA and how important it was to our business and to the way we did business.
And so his name was Axel M. Rosenlund.
Yes, Axel Maud Rosenlund, yeah. And he was from Göteborg, from Gothenburg, Sweden.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. You were unaware that you were on their radar. So how did they contact you and what happened?
Well, they called me up and offered me the award. They actually called me last year and they wanted me to come to the Congress and receive it, but we had another trip planned. So it was a conflict because we were going to be traveling at that time, so that we weren't able to receive it then at the Congress. So then they put it on the docket for this year. Who knew that COVID was going to come? But I received the award by Zoom, and it's really quite a nice validation.
It's still an honor. But it would have been nice to be at a conference.
It would have been fun to have been at the conference, and I went to the different, but it was amazing how they did it by Zoom, and how you'd approach it, and how you would go in, and how you talk to other people. I mean, it was really an amazing thing, and it was so well done. But it would have been nice to have been at the conference and received it in person.
Well, we understand how you would be. You're protecting a legacy business, a long business, but protecting your clients, especially in the time of COVID, what are some of the things that you were cited for, or things you were commended for?
We've spent days and nights just, first of all, contacting every client once really starting in early February, asking people if they still wanted to travel. And it wasn't really until about the 1st of March that people started to express concerns. And at that point, we started working with people to cancel their reservations and receive refunds. And we had, I don't even want to quote the dollar number of potential travel revenue that we forfeited or lost, but we kept calling clients and suggesting that they cancel and suggesting that we try to get a refund immediately, not knowing what would happen. And that has been a blessing because we have been able to recover hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially for clients. And for some people and for some circumstances, the future cruise and tour credits were a better choice. But for many people, we've been able to recover a great deal of funds. We've done that independent of receiving any revenue at all. And we've done that as a service to our clients. And then at the same time, through COVID, when times were so dark and people were so negative, we were talking to our clients every day as friends, and we would exchange stories about COVID, and we would reminisce about trips that we had either taken together or that I had planned for them or whatever. And so for myself and my husband, the COVID time went by quickly because we were busy talking to our...
And you just did that naturally.
It was just a natural... It had nothing to do with business or creating business or worrying about future business. It was just the thing we had to do to protect our clients. First of all, to keep them from going into a situation that could be potentially harmful to them in their health. And second of all, to protect their funds as a fiduciary of our clients' monies.
What I was wondering was, since you had such a legacy, such a long history with this agency, with Rosenlund, my question was there a piece of advice that withstood the test of time, generation after generation, one from your grandfather and one from your father?
You know, it's all the same advice. And the advice is generally that we are stewards of our clients' dreams and money, and that it wasn't about anything that we intended to gain or that we were going to own, that we were simply stewards of our clients' dreams and our clients' funds, and that we were fiduciaries of those funds. and that we needed to protect our clients' money, pay our income taxes to the fullest when they were due, and maintain good records, good bookkeeping records. Those were the kinds of general advice items that I received perpetually from all the family members.
What's wonderful about that advice is that it isn't about making money and getting rich. That was almost just a cherry on top, a reward that was not, you just enjoyed the process and took care of people, and it naturally took care of you.
That's exactly the way it worked. That's exactly the way it worked. And still does.
Let's talk about the future now. Do you see signs of recovery? What are people interested in right now?
Well, this has been a really tough time, and I don't know if the industry's ever been so so bereft. It's been very difficult, and I don't want to minimize the difficulty, because the financial pressure that the lack of revenue for such a long time has put on every aspect of the travel industry, from the cruise lines to the hotel chains to little travel agencies like us, is enormous. The pressure is enormous. I think things are starting to come back. People want so much to travel. They're booking trips now for a year from now. Very few people are willing to travel in the near future, although a couple have taken some trips or planned some trips that they'll be taking in the next several weeks. But it is cumbersome right now with the COVID test requirements and the need to quarantine for 14 days. People who want to travel right now really have to take into consideration the willingness to quarantine somewhere, possibly for 14 days, and at their own expense, because the insurance companies are generally not covering COVID-related quarantines. So that's a little awkward right now, but we're hoping for a vaccine, hoping for better remedies, and we're booking a great many people for 2021 and even for 2022. So if agencies can just hang on,
What advice can you give agencies on how to hang on?
The only thing I can think of to say is to slash your expenses to nothing. Just go through every last bill you've paid in the last 2 years and figure out how to get out of having to pay that bill for another day. And just take your business down to the very basics and wait it out. That's the only advice I can give. Do you have any other ideas?
That's the whole reason for Insider Travel Report. We keep educating and getting the information out there. We're certainly hoping people are getting government relief. We're hoping that there'll be more government relief. But the other side of it is of course, slashing costs. Got to do it. So now we're going out to about 100,000 travel advisors. Do you have any inspiring words that they can hold on to at this time?
These are very difficult times. The travel industry has faced difficult times in the past and will again. The world is not a settled place. It probably never has been, never will be. But the need to travel is huge in people, and the need to connect with people is huge. And if we can one by one connect with other people who have other ideas, other motives, and other interests, and we can all see how similar we are rather than how different we are. I think travel facilitates that kind of understanding of humanity throughout the world at a level that other experiences simply cannot do.
Well, we are wishing all of us good health and prosperity, and that we are able to support that dream. Travel is important to us. Travel does change us and does support us. I thank you so much for your time.
Well, I thank you for interviewing me and for giving me a chance to reminisce about the long family history that we have in travel, and also to get really ready to go out again and reinvent ourselves.
Good luck to you guys.
And thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Alan.
And this is Alan Fine for Insider Travel Report.